You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Back, run like a wild man.
I watched you struggle and I watched you wrestle with them angels.
Delirious. From Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct Neville Arena time is 9:24 p.m. Greetings and salutations, Orange and Truthers. It is I, at CenterCrow2 on Twitter, at CenterCrow on Venmo. It is the Orange and True podcast brought to you by the friendly folks at collegeofmagnolia.com. You have found us. To one side of me is the rumor monger, Ryan S. Starrett. The S stands for sold all of his shares in FTX.
I got about a dollar back out of it. No, the S stands for sappy this week. Watching that post game did the heart a lot of good.
The other side of me giving you the full Fort Payne ASMR. A man who loves the way North Alabama is representing for his Tigers is the AU chief.
Hi. Made $45 selling an NFT today.
So, hey,
was the monkey wearing a 24 Auburn jersey? Is that what it was? Or
it's not one of those. There's
okay.
Just so anyone doesn't misunderstand what NFTs are, they are gambling. You go to a NFT site and you just buy up a bunch, hoping that they go for big money. So it's nothing to do with art or anything like that.
It's cool pictures of monkeys, right?
No. It's generative art. So it's just lines and just shapes.
Well, if it's gambling, it's probably degenerative art.
Now we're talking.
There you go.
I saw there's a website that's making a luxury. There's a company that's trying to start. They've been trying to start for like 5 years now to make luxury yachts that are submarines for the ultra rich.
Oh, boy.
And they have been trying to get off the ground for a while. I don't know what the market is for this. Hundreds of millions of dollars submarines.
Real bond
in about
energy.
Yeah, as we say, in about 30 years, as the sea levels keep rising, I think that market might increase. I think that's how you sell it.
Currently,
you
got to
push.
Global
warming is real. You guys are going to need these soon.
You're going to want to get underwater.
Get in it now.
Currently, you can buy NFTs of the yachts. And that's all they're selling currently.
And that will speed up the global warming.
No, I feel like this is maybe a scam. That's what it seems like to me. All right. Because you can have an NFT, but you got that somebody else actually owns in real life, which seems it seems backwards. Guys, speaking of something that was non-fungible, it was the way we all felt about Auburn football on Saturday night. Can't hardly put it into words.
I gotta applaud that segue.
It was good. And professional podcaster, and even I had a hard time staying neutral on Saturday night because
your beloved Aggies, they tried so hard.
I mean, team that I hate the most on earth got its medicine served to it by a coach that is making less this year than Jimbo will make for that game.
You think Jimbo could afford a mega yacht with his contract?
Jimbo might be buying one of those. Yeah, submarine yacht. Can he hunt off of it? That's the question.
You can help whales.
Shooting sperm whales.
Duck hunt.
Yeah. Texas A&M paid Jimbo Fisher a little bit less than $1 million per game and so far. And in this game, he decided to not gain a yard for an entire quarter of football, which is difficult to do. It's difficult to do against the Auburn defense this season would be to go 0 yards, much less negative 13 yards in five straight drives combined.
The thing that perplexed me was that they seemed to have some success running the ball early in the game and then really just never ran it again after the second quarter.
Yeah, the third quarter, you know, cut out of halftime, 14 snaps in the quarter for minus 1 yard. I want to say three and outs. And then, like, the fourth drive was about to be a three and out before the end of the third quarter.
And they were almost all passes.
Yes, yes. There was, I think, one run which got called back on a penalty. Yeah, the minus 1 yard, minus 11 if you count the penalty yards. Somehow they did worse than the 05 South Carolina team in the third quarter.
Wow.
That was, if you remember, Crow.
06.
It was 06, you're right, sorry. The South Carolina doesn't touch the ball for the entire quarter game. Once I kicked it here, though, they A&M touched the ball. They just probably would have rather not. They would have rather not.
Yeah, they touched the ball and would have been better off taking a knee. Or spiking it.
Spikes, yeah.
Spikes, they would have been better off spiking it because it would have stopped the clock at least. Yeah. And they wouldn't have lost any yards. They had 10 penalty yards in that quarter. They had more yards.
One was intentional. They were trying to back the punter up.
Right. But they had more yards and penalties than they had in anything else. It was horrible. I watched, so I followed the game on Gamecast Live and on Twitter. And then, because I was unable to get the SEC Network where I was Saturday night. But then rewatched bulks of the game without commercials today. And it is, a couple of things were evident. Number one, Texas A&M didn't want to be there. They didn't want to be anywhere in the middle of that game. Like, there was no energy on their sideline. There was nothing. They just looked like they were just out there.
The game started, through stuff. You know, somewhat interesting. I mean, see, both teams kind of moved the ball early, especially Auburn. Auburn was just getting into the, you know, their half of the field and falling apart offensively. But it wasn't a just abysmal showing of offense in the first half. And then, yeah, that third quarter. I mean, Auburn didn't do a ton in that quarter, you know, gained more than a negative yard, but it just, I think the cold set in a little bit. A&M didn't want to come out of that locker room. And in Auburn's credit, I mean, the crowd was still in it. It was as good of an atmosphere for any 2-3-6 teams you probably ever seen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would shout out to whoever's calling plays for Auburn, because I actually don't know who is. Is Will Friend calling plays?
I think it's Will Friend. Yeah.
Okay. He might be a better play caller than he is an offensive line coach, because
it's a low bar, but you know, I'd be right.
Because there was a little bit of creativity. There was some pretty good little play calls and some designs and some wrinkles we have not seen at all. A couple of plays where Hunter and Tank were on the field at the same time. There was one play where Damari was on the field with both of them too.
Yeah, they used all the running backs. They used Jarquez on a speed sweep, I think, twice, and he got the edge both times. I mean, I don't really look at him as a speed back, but I'm going to say A&M it worked at least.
We
kind of knew. We talked about last week. I mean, this is one of the worst rush defenses, not just in the Power Five, but in the country.
Right.
So Auburn, I think, went like 3-1 rushes to passes.
We had to. We could not throw the ball. We have now going back to the LSU game last year. We have not been a position. We've not been in a position.
The where first half game this game. Bo was playing well in that game. Didn't Bo have like 300 yards before he got hurt in the Ole Miss game?
Oh, I think you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
A good night, and then all of a sudden he just couldn't anymore.
So once he got hurt against Ole Miss, from then on, I have not been confident on pass plays for Auburn.
Two Auburn running backs ran for 100 yards in this game, and Nathan King pointed this out either that night or Sunday afternoon. This was the first time it's happened for Auburn since Crow, do you know?
That we had two running backs?
Two running backs, yes. So obviously Nick Marshall doesn't count here.
Did Cameron Ernest Payne get 100 yards in the 2013 SEC Championship game? If so, that's
he did not. He only had three carries, but it was three for 60, I think.
I knew it was a lot. Okay. That was one of my guess.
I mean, if you think about running back duos over the last, you know, if you just start working backwards, I guess. I mean, there was kind of just the random assortment of Booby Whitlow, Malik Miller, Sean Shire.
Yeah.
All of those guys.
Was it Ronnie and Cadillac?
Not quite that long ago.
Okay. Was it Kenny Irons and Brad Lester?
A little more.
Brad Lester never had 100 yards.
Yeah, it definitely wasn't Brad Lester.
Let's see. Was it Ben Tate and someone?
That's one of them.
Ben Tate and...
I'll give you a hint. It was in 2009.
Yeah.
First time was 2009.
So 2009, it wouldn't have been Trey Mason because he wasn't...
Nope. He didn't start yet. Until 2012.
It wouldn't have been Mike Dyer because he didn't start until 2010. So it's...
Getting closer.
Is it Mario Fannin?
No, it's Ontario McCaleb.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, Ben Tate and Ontario McCaleb in 2009. 13 years since Auburn's had 200-yard running backs. I mean, we talk about
O-Mac the 2013 team. O-Mac would have been a freshman in 2009.
Believe so. Freshman or sophomore.
Yeah.
But yeah, we've talked about, you know, how many times about all the NFL running backs on that 2013 team. You had, and obviously Gus was a ride one guy until I can't anymore kind of offense. But you had Trey Mason, you had Peyton Barber, you had Cameron Artis Payne, you had Corey Grant. None of those guys ever went. Two of them ever went for 100 yards at the same time.
Yeah.
You had Kerryon and Cameron Petway overlapping. Didn't happen there. Yeah, I thought that was interesting. I mean, a school that's prided itself on running backs for so long hasn't done it since then.
Yeah.
I would guess there were probably more than a few occasions where it happened in the total years. But.
I mean, it's a lot. To hit two running backs. And I feel like we have a couple of times we've had a quarterback and a running back with 100 yards rushing.
Right, yeah. I mean, if you count Cam and Nick Marshall, I mean, that happened fairly often, I think.
Yeah.
Cam and Mike Dyer doing it at the same time. Nick and Trey doing it at the same time.
I'm actually somewhat shocked that we didn't have two running backs in that 2015 Arkansas game, considering it was just such an absolute
slaughter. I want to say there was a receiver that ran for 100
yards. Eli Stove had 100 yards. Yeah. No, but that's interesting, because that's the game that I, before I said 2013 SEC championship game, my first thought was, did we get two running backs in 2015? But then I couldn't remember who it would have been.
Yeah, was 2015, healthy. You would have had like a freshman carry on. You had Jovan Robinson on that team. Can't remember if Rock Thomas was still there in 15 or not.
Man, shout out to Jovan Robinson for being one of those guys that everyone thought that, I, including me, was going to be like the next thing.
He was a huge recruit for Auburn twice.
Yeah, I know.
And yeah, he's a like high 4-star coming out of high school, didn't qualify, went to JUCO, and became the number one JUCO running back.
No.
Was it not a qualifying thing?
It was a not qualifying thing, but it was because his teacher got turned in. Like, he had already.
Oh, that was him. Okay. I knew he had signed.
Yeah. So it was a whole deal where he became academically ineligible, I guess. So then went to JUCO and then came back.
Didn't last very long the second time either.
No.
But, we don't really have to go too far into this game, really. I mean, 13-10, it's not really a ton of highlights to focus on. Props for Colby Wooden, got a SEC defensive lineman of the week for that strip sack, which I don't know if you guys heard the story on this. He called it before it happened.
Oh, really?
There was a timeout before that player, a stoppage or, you know, whatever happened. And he's telling his teammates, telling the coaches what the move is going to be on the left tackle. On the left tackle. And he did exactly that. Got straight into the backfield, stripped it. Morris Joseph falls on it. And play the game.
Nice.
Man, that was the play of the game. Because at that point, it was... I mean, we didn't realize that field goal was going to be the game winner. But
yeah,
it was definitely still up in the air. And yeah, I was, that when that happened, it was kind of this huge sigh of relief.
Like, yeah, once you went up two scores in the fourth quarter, you felt there's no way this A&M offense is going to score twice. They did go down in a two-minute drill and score. You know, it came down to an onside kick, but you felt pretty good going up two, though.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Carnell Williams a little bit. I mean, this was a moment in Auburn history. Not just, you know, a former player gets to be the coach and wins, not just the first African-American head coach to win a game at Auburn. All these are huge things, obviously, but so many people have a tie with Cadillac, whether he was, you know, the second coming of Bo when he got to Auburn, or whether he was, you know, the best running back you've ever seen for you guys. I mean, I can't speak to how you viewed him being in school here at the time, but for me, he was, you know, the first hero football player. Like, he was it. Like, didn't get better than Cadillac. I don't know. Yeah, we'll talk about it a little bit. But.
Yeah, so he was my favorite player on the team. My freshman year was 04, and Carnell was my favorite player on the team. And
you grew up seeing some pretty good running backs too, right? I mean, you had Emma Smith at the Cowboys, like, you,
right?
So you knew what teams that were focused on a good running back looked like.
I was, and running back was my favorite position, one of my favorite positions. It's like, look, you got a good running back, this thing can move. And because, yeah, the Cowboys were always about, you had to have one receiver that's any good, one quarterback, and then one running back. And they still, because Jerry is obsessed with the past, still operate that way.
He comes into college football like right after, you know, Ricky Williams is, you know, blowing it up at Texas, and
I knew about him because my brother was older than me and was at Auburn, and I remember the 03 Iron Bowl. I was in the stadium and it was Go Crazy Cadillac, and that was legitimately the moment I decided I wanted to come to Auburn. So Carnell's got a tremendous amount of, like, meaning to me in terms of I'm an Auburn fan in a lot of ways because of him. Because I went to Auburn after the 03 Iron Bowl. That was, like, what made me want to do it. And then in 04, when we found out he was coming back, like, when he and Ronnie announced they were coming back, I was so excited because, like, I would get to see him play. I didn't know how good we were going to be. I don't think anybody really knew how good that 04 team was going to be.
Yeah, because the 03 team had been so bad.
Right. And people had, like, different things they liked about each back. Like, everyone liked Ronnie was the physical one. Ronnie could catch. That was – but Cadillac Williams had some of the most unbelievable open field moves, one cut back moves that I'd ever seen. And early in that year in 04, I was like, oh, no, this dude's my favorite player on the team. Like, if I had been a jersey guy, I would have bought a 24 jersey, just for sure.
Yeah, I mean, so you mentioned Go Crazy Cadillac. I mean, that's one of the biggest plays. I mean, you see it in every highlight package now. It's, you know, that's Bo over the top for the older generation. It's, you know, the kick six or the Perringer in here for the younger generation. I mean, that was – and it helps. Yeah, that's Rod Bramblett's first major call, right?
And it helps. It was the first play of the game.
Right. It's just – it's almost the opposite of the kick six, right? Like, it didn't end the game. Right. It started it, and it set a precedent.
That stadium got so loud and never calmed down.
Yeah. It's funny. So even my sister, who she was born about 3 weeks after Cadillac's last game at Auburn, after that Sugar Bowl. So never saw him play for Auburn. Never saw him play at all, really.
Yeah.
And then Sunday morning,
students did either.
Yeah. Yeah, right. But Sunday morning, she is posting the video of his post-game press conference saying, no, I'd run through a brick wall for this man. Like, that's how much he means and has already, like, that's how Auburn he is to people that are half his age or younger.
Yeah. What's amazing about the Go Crazy Collect, too, is it's the one that everybody remembers. But in my opinion, his best run is against Tennessee in that SEC championship game. He has a run against Tennessee where he makes one guy miss, and it is one of the most filthy moves anybody has ever made in an Auburn helmet. And at that moment, I was like, we should be national champions. It was like the who's better than us moment. Like, am I got somebody better than this on their team?
So a perfect parallel for that then is, you know, against Tennessee in an SEC title game. That's Jared giving up the easy layup to pass it out to Bryce.
Yes, exactly.
They're not beating that.
Oh, when he did that in that game, because that game was a lot closer than the first Tennessee game. But when he did that in that game, I was like, no, they ain't beating us. Nobody's beating us. We could play anybody right now. We'd win. His post-game press conference is the most honest, like in the moment, positive athlete energy you've ever seen. And I love it. Like, it is exactly the opposite of what this program has had for the last 2 years. The idea that he was on this dude's staff is amazing to me. Like, how did Carnell exist on this staff is what I would love to hear him write it. Like, I would love to have him have an interview where he talked about, like, because they're opposite personalities.
And you know, he never will. He'll never throw him under the bus.
But they're opposite personality types.
I think that even if that opposite personality works, you need a guy like Carnell on staff anyway, right? To balance it out. So that,
but the way that it works, and maybe not the way it ended, but the way it worked for several years, is you had a Rodney Garner on the Gus Malzahn staff. You know, somebody that's a little more tough love on,
sure,
under a head coach that's a little more laid back. Didn't really work with the Harsin way, but
no.
Yeah, no. So they, I can't remember if I could hear the interview or not in the stadium, but you could see, you know, they have a camera on them post game and everything, and he's immediately after the handshake, he's running over to the student section, and you can tell he's emotional. You know, he holds the towel up to his face because there's tears coming. You can see it. And it's, yeah, all I can say is that it's a moment. It's one of those things. Auburn gets these, it feels like, more than most other places, of just feeling like an Auburn thing. I can't describe it. I don't know. Craig, you're better at this than I am.
But yeah, it's so Auburn. It's something like,
how many other places would be this happy about a win to get to four wins?
Right. That's the thing.
Regardless,
there's not a lot of places. LSU could pull it off because people love LSU so much and live and die and will sell that stadium out no matter what, because it's just what you do on Saturdays.
Right.
Auburn's that way too, in that people just love this team regardless of who's coaching, who's playing. It's like the best way to put it is, what made Cadillac so amazing as a player too was he was getting picked up by national media constantly because he was so good. And the reaction of Auburn people wasn't, of course he is, that's the best player in America, we're the best team in America. It was almost like our brother or our friend got his name in the paper would be the way that we reacted. Like, with pride.
That's how this whole coaching thing feels. I mean, that's like, I saw sometimes co-host James Jones after the game, and as we were hugging, I mean, that was the first thing I said is, one of us did it. Like he is one of us. And not to bring up soccer again, but like the thing I've been thinking about this week really was when Duncan Ferguson took over Everton. Not a guy that anybody ever thought would be a coach. And he kind of picked him up out of the muck and got him playing Everton football, and which is what Carnell is really putting emphasis on, is just Auburn football. Just hard-nosed, smash mouth, running the ball down people's throats, Auburn football. And that, I mean, that's what it is that I think is so attractive about this whole thing that's going on right now, is that he is one of us. He's an Auburn guy.
He's one of our own. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And not just because he played here. Like, and I think we all are on the same page. It's not, oh, this is a former Auburn player that, you know, came back as a coach and was able to win a game. This is, I mean, he gets what
this place is about. Yeah, that, I mean, that's why I was drawing that parallel. He's
a small town Alabama guy too. And yeah, there is always going to be, as cheesy as it is, as much as the university sells it as a marketing tool, like the Auburn family is a real thing. And he is the perfect example of that. Like, you know, it doesn't necessarily have the best resume, kind of, I don't know how you want to say it, but if he didn't go to Auburn, he wouldn't have been Auburn's running back coach when Gus hired him. I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. But has come in and then been fantastic at his job since he got here. I mean, Auburn's running backs have not been the problem in the last 3 to 4 years.
He's recruited
well. He's coached these kids well. I mean, the players on this team love him. Tank wouldn't be here if it wasn't for him. And he said he kind of leaned on these guys the past 2 weeks to, you know, give him reassurance, hype him up, just tell him to be the coach that he is, because they love that coach and everybody else does too. You know, I don't really want to spend this time focusing on like what happens after the season. I'm just enjoying this as it is.
I mean, he's done a lot for Auburn. I mean, and not just like.
That is wrong. I mean, we're actually like recruiting better than we have in the last 2 years.
To be honest, he's used to it. He is Auburn's career leader in carries, if I remember correctly. Yeah. He is very much used to having to tote the ball for Auburn, and he does it better than, I mean, how many running backs honestly are better than him for Auburn?
Bo, I mean, that's it.
Arguably
the best running back ever. Like,
right.
I'm a Ronnie Brown guy, but okay.
Okay.
And there was a moment, I don't know if you saw it on TV Crow, where the two of them were hugging on the sideline post game.
Oh yeah.
That's a moment. So you're talking about a guy who, not just a player, a guy who made a lot of money in the NFL. I'm looking at his career earnings right now. NFL
rookie of the year. I mean,
there were some people out on Twitter, some trolls on Twitter trying to say that, you know, Carnell's here because he didn't make enough money in the NFL. No. So he needed a coach. Carnell made $25 million in the NFL. He did not need to come back and coach.
Carnell made more on the day he got drafted than most of us will in our lifetime. So
he did it because he loves it.
Well, yeah. He told the story about why he got into coaching. His wife said to him, "You talk to your friends every weekend all day about football on the phone. Why don't you go get a job coaching?"
Right.
And so that's what he did. And he got the job at IMG, I guess, is where he started.
I can't remember if he started at IMG or if he did that, like, this little stint at West Georgia first.
Yeah, maybe that's what happened.
Regardless, but,
pretty short journey from there to Auburn. He was hired, was he just running backs coach for the Birmingham Iron or Hammers or whatever it was?
So, his resume is in 2015, running backs coach to Henderson State, which I don't know if that's D2 or FCS. Went to West Georgia the next season as a GA. Okay. Then he was at IMG after that in 2017. Birmingham Iron in 18, and then Gus brought him on in 2019.
So yeah,
he was never at Henderson State?
Is that not where Gus played?
That's in Arkadelphia. Yeah.
That's where Gus played. I just realized. That's where Gus
played. Yeah.
I mean, that is not close to anywhere Cadillac lives or lived.
I mean, I kind of wonder if Gus got him that job.
Maybe. That's a story we need to find out about now.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if Gus had to get him that job. You're a former NFL running back, and you walk into Henderson State's locker room.
Well, pointed him to that job.
Yeah.
Maybe he called up Auburn and said, "Hey, I'm looking to coach." And Gus was like, "Well, let me see what I can do." And that's where he found a spot for him that, you know, would take him.
Yeah, they are Division II.
Yeah.
And remember, Carnell didn't get his degree before he went to the NFL. I mean, like a lot of guys.
He got it in 2017.
Yeah, you get your money. He came back and worked for it. And that's like right before he got into coaching. You know, I don't know if that's something he needed to do to get a coaching job. Some places
probably in D1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you want to know?
Might have been maybe Gus tells him, "Hey, if you're going to be a coach, go get your degree first, and then."
Notable alumni for Art Henderson State include Gus Malzahn, Billy Bob Thornton, and Aaron Owens, aka AO from the M1 mixtape tour.
Oh man,
so, yeah,
Bobby Bones of the Bobby Bones Show,
and Bobby Bones. That's right. You're looking at it too. Also, Dolores White, who was on the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, the actual story that League of Their Own is based off of, went to Henderson State. So, a well-rounded.
Who's university. Who of Arkansas?
Yeah, a well-rounded university there in Arkadelphia. Carnell Williams becomes the first African-American man to win a game at Auburn as head football coach, which is a significant milestone in the Southeastern Conference and at Auburn.
Pretty cool.
That makes Auburn the, I think it's the fifth school that have happened at.
Yeah, I think
in the SEC.
Vanderbilt.
Oh, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, A&M.
Ellis, did LSU have? No.
No.
I think there's LSU,
one more. A&M, Mississippi State, us, Vandy. We're forgetting somebody. I'm going to remember it tonight.
Kentucky?
Oh, Joker Phillips. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good one, Chief. I don't want James to text us. There's nobody that didn't have any sort of there's nobody that didn't. Great sentence. This is starting off as Crow. There's everybody watching this game had a different experience and had a positive experience. And that speaks to Auburn as well in terms of like just we were all desperate for something positive.
Yep.
And Carnell Williams, Cadillac Williams is exactly what we were desperate for. And we didn't even know it. There were a lot of people that wanted Harsin fired that weren't necessarily stumping for Cadillac to be the interim.
I mean, I wanted him to be the interim, but I'll be honest, like going into the Harsin firing, I was like, yeah, just fire him, get to the end of the season and let's move on. Like, did not really care to see the rest of these games and Cadillac flipped that switch. I mean, it was amazing. I don't know. I don't really want to focus on it. I don't know what the future holds for him, but it's a great start for his head coaching career, wherever that goes.
Gonna be even better when he goes 3-0 here in that last 3 weeks of the year.
pretty good for a guy that had never even thought about being a head coach 2 weeks ago until 2 weeks ago today, really, when Rich went to him and told him about this job. So, pretty good start.
He had never thought about being a head coach. Becomes a head coach, beats the highest paid head coach. All in a span of 3 weeks.
It's pretty awesome.
I think if you beat the highest paid head coach, you get his game check.
You should. You should.
That is how it should work. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, all right.
Any other thoughts there? Are we ready to move on?
Well, yeah. Next week, we got senior night against Western Kentucky, the Toppers.
Big Red.
Yeah. How are they this year? Are they?
They're solid. I mean, they're one of the best teams in the CUSA. I mean, Auburn's still favored, but I don't know this for a fact. I need Josh to actually deep dive into this. I assume this is the smallest line Auburn's ever had against a G5 team. They're Auburn's favored by 6.
Yeah, at home.
I can't think of any other situation. Short of a bowl game, but
I
actually think this game could be a lot harder than that Texas A&M game was.
Oh, for sure. I mean, as people are still going to be there to go see Cadillac. I mean,
sure,
there's more fun around the program than there was a month ago for the Arkansas game, but also it's going to be a little bit of a letdown. I think
it's you're not going to get them.
Yeah, you're not going to get the night pregame and the hype around that. It's going to be pretty cold. That's not a small part of it.
What if I told you that Austin Reed, the quarterback for the Hilltoppers, he's a senior. He has attempted a little over double the amount of passes as one Robert Ashford. but he has triple the yards.
That's it.
31 touchdowns to Robbie's 6, and they each have only thrown 7 interceptions.
Crow, you like me saw the touchdown pass in this game. I mean, yeah, that man. Thing. That what thing. A worm burner! That thing was like 6 inches off the ground the whole way. It was insane.
Yeah, I saw that pass and thought, man, that was almost not a catch.
That was a one hopper to the catcher to get the guy out of home.
Yeah,
from center field.
Oh man, it was something.
Their quarterback has 31 passing touchdowns in this season. They got a receiver with almost 1,000 yards.
Have they played a Power 5 team this year?
They played somebody and beat them.
Hopefully they played more than one team and beat them.
They lost to Indiana.
Oh, boy.
They lost to Troy, lost to Indiana.
Troy, by the way, in the driver's seat in the Sun Belt right now.
Lost to UTSA. Meet me.
Whoop, Troy.
They lost to University of North Texas, but they beat UAB. They beat Charlotte. They beat Rice. So, no, they have not beaten a Power 5 team.
Yeah, they rate really well, but schedule doesn't really show it right now. They did hang 73 on FIU.
They beat them 73-0. Did not
give up a point. So,
I don't think Auburn could beat anybody 73-0. To be 100% honest,
not if you gave them all week to do it.
That's a lot of touchdowns. I don't know. We've got that this year.
Well, if the clock stopped after a run, the way it does after like a first down pass or incomplete or something like that, then maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
We'd be running the clock out too fast to be doing it with this offense.
But they lost to Indiana and Sean Shivers 33-30. The Indiana team who lost to the team that I think is the best team in America, Ohio State, 56-14 last week.
Yikes.
But by the way, that was Indiana's last win of the season.
Started
3-0, have lost 7 in a row since.
Oh.
But we don't really need to get into the Big Ten dregs right now, I don't think.
And that game was an overtime game. They took Indiana to overtime. Well, we're excited about this game because it gets us perhaps 1 week closer to figure out who the coach of Auburn next season's going to be.
1 week closer to qualifying for a bowl as well.
1 week closer to qualifying for a bowl because we're going to beat Alabama.
And it's senior night. This senior class has had a hell of a career at Auburn.
They have. They really have.
They deserve. The guys that are here and stuck it out, they deserve some love. So come on down, Chuck.
This is a senior class, if you need your memory refreshed, that beat Alabama as freshmen, thought the world is ahead of them. They got a freshman quarterback that everyone thought was great, beat Alabama, COVID happens, they got to deal with that.
Deal with the coup at the end of that season, coach firing.
Coach firing that was ugly. And then new coach comes in. He is just a big turd. He gets fired, and now they get Carnell. So give this team all your love on senior night. All right. Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and talk basketball.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
And we're back, as long as we still had sponsors. Otherwise, you're just listening to me produce a show by myself. And basketball got a win, an ugly, terrible win against an ugly, terrible basketball team, UCF, USF, sorry.
Same thing. Actually, the announcer in the arena did the same thing. Twice. They're called the UCF.
UCF, USF, FIU, FAU. They got to get it together in Florida. The teams are all too similar. Auburn did not fix its shooting in this game and combined with USF to go 7 for 39 from deep. I looked this up today, guys. We are shooting at a similar rate of made threes in a game to the University of Virginia Cavaliers. Mm-hmm. However, we have a full 10 more possessions per game than they do. So,
it's not as bad as it could be.
They're doing it intentionally because they are slowing the game down to a standstill. We're doing it because we just cannot make shots.
Yeah. Yeah, it was tough to watch at times what day was that, Friday?
Friday night, yep.
The first half was especially rough. The second half was better. I mean, we never obviously improved our shooting, but we figured out how to break that zone down that they went into for whatever reason.
Yeah, we did. And then they went to that zone. Well, they went to the zone because we can't make threes. I'm sure they were thinking, this is it. What are they going to do, shoot over us?
And then Wendell Green proceeded to score, 20-something points against that zone.
The other way to beat the zone is to penetrate over and over and over again. And just
The end of that game kind of felt like the UAB game during the Final Four year, I think, up in Birmingham, where we're not really playing that well, but our point guard is just going to continue to go to the rack over.
He's just better than everybody you have. So,
I mean, he, I think, was 5 of 6 maybe from two, and then 4 of 6 from two, and then 9 of 11 from the straight. I mean, he was just kind of a one man offense down the stretch there. I don't know. I don't know if we would take this time to shout out Wendell Green for being a top 5 player in the KenPom Player of the Year rankings right now through a giant sample size of 2 games, but still. Doing this while not shooting the ball very well. His assist rate's great. He's not turning the ball over right now. I have really high hopes for Wendell this year, and I think he's really going to have a breakout. If anybody else can start shooting well, his assist numbers are going to skyrocket. So,
yeah, you're right. He had a lot of empty assists, as I call them, in which you have passed through a guy with an open shot, and that guy clanks it.
The no-look oop at Dylan Cardwell was just – oh, it's beautiful.
That was a top 10 play in Auburn Arena, I would say.
Unbelievable. It's the kind of pass that we got robbed out of seeing from Sharif Cooper. That like it was like a preternatural. Like I don't know how he throws the ball that far that precisely without looking at it. But
it was also what makes it amazing is because it follows him getting a rundown steal.
Yeah.
He runs down, gets a steal, turns around, brings it back down. Between his leg dribble and then no look alley-oop. It's unreal.
He may not be Jared Harper yet, but year two with Jared Harper took a few games to kind of take off and then really took off. If his shooting picks up, sky's the limit with Wendell. I love watching him play. Dylan Cardwell, number one in the country in block percentage right now. Just picking up where Walk left off.
Really? He had
9 blocks through 2 games. 9 blocks through 2 games. He's blocking almost a third of all 2-point attempts when he's on the floor. He's at 29% right now. Obviously, that'll come down a little bit, but maybe not this next week. Not a ton of size. Going to have some more chances here, especially Jani Broome kind of dealing with a sore ankle. I would not be surprised if he's not going, 25 minutes a game, Jani. So more opportunities for Dylan here to keep showing out.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this USF game? I mean,
maybe just the opponent. I want to get better shooting 3-pointers. That's my thought.
We do have potentially another wing coming in the next week.
Yeah, I posted this in the Slack. We are currently making 4.5 threes a game, and we were double that last year, double that 2 years ago, and double that 3 years ago. So it isn't like every year we are making 10 or 13, but most years we're making about between 8 and 9 threes a game. And currently we're making 4.5. And that just, it's got to go up. Like, there are not, teams don't win the conference in this conference making 4 threes a game in 2022.
We would be remiss to not give Alan Flanagan some credit here. Not, I mean, not a perfect game by any means. Still has.
Did he make all of our threes?
So we made 5. He was 3 of 6.
Yeah, he made 3 of 6, 3 of 4
from 2. Randall had points. 4 rebounds. I mean,
we've made 9 threes this year.
Had the 5 turnovers, but you know, you'll live with it if he's actually shooting 50% from deep.
If he makes three three-pointers a game, I think we'll be fine.
For sure.
Because I feel like other guys will get something together.
Right. Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it'd be nice if you could clean those turnovers up in the future. But, you know, I know, as long as you have twice as many points as you do turnovers, I think you're okay.
I think you're right.
We've been hard on Flan, you know, for a while now on the show. I mean, especially the Auburn fan base as a whole has been tough on him. Not entirely undeserved, but he had a good game here, so we need to give him credit for that. 18 points when your team is struggling to score anything, when you're down 20, down by 9.5, is huge.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, he really, all those turnovers were right, you know, at the beginning, and then he settled in and had a really good game after that. So
yeah.
All right. Who we got this week, Ryan?
Tomorrow night, today, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, we have Winthrop. Decent.
The Eagles, right?
Yeah, I believe that's right. That's out of South Carolina. They're a decent mid-major. They're 164 in KenPom right now. They're struggle with rebounding and getting blocked. I mean, this is a small sample size stat if I've ever seen it, but 9% of your own offensive rebounds is
yikes.
That's about like Auburn shooting 18% from three. I mean, that's
wow. You mentioned they didn't have a lot of size, right?
Yeah. Let me pull their number back up. Hang on. They're 208th in the country in average height. I mean, not absurdly low, but they're not all that height is in the backcourt. I mean, their rotation at power forward and center is 6'7", 6'7", 6'7", 6'7". So this mentioned already, Dylan Cardwell should have every size advantage possible here. He should be able to get inside, to get all those rebounds like he has been. And they struggle with block rate too. So, you know, we said Dylan is first in the country at 29% with his block rate. The Winthrop offense is, as a whole, is 26%. So they're making everybody look like Dylan Cardwell, basically.
Yeah. Which means the real Dylan Cardwell will be doing great.
Yeah. So luckily we didn't have the 3-point curse of me saying, oh, USF can't shoot, and then them shooting well because they shot worse than Auburn did last week. But that's what this Winthrop offense can do. They can shoot the ball. They're 43% as a team through two games, which we would kill for right now. And they're 90% from the stripe too. So they can score if they get clean looks.
SUNY's offensive rebounds when we just make everything.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, Auburn matches up well against this team. It's, you know, it's another fine test. It's not going to hurt your strength schedule, really. You know, it's a team that if the things break right for them, they could win the Big South. They're, yeah, probably middle of the conference there. But, yeah, I mean, this is another chance for Auburn to get right shooting. Maybe Chance debuts. We'll see how much Shania plays, but I'd like to see the offense as a whole shoot the ball better from three and two, honestly.
Yeah. Well, let's get a couple of wins this weekend and come back and do this again next week.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we got a second game this week before we were going to record again.
Okay.
Talk about it. So this is Friday night. It's a late night, 8 o'clock Friday. So if you're in town,
Boy.
If you're coming down from Birmingham, from Atlanta, from Montgomery, you got time to get in Auburn for this one.
You got to get two nights in your hotel room anyway. Might as well be Friday night, Saturday night.
Look, your friends don't want to get up at 7 in the morning for you to come in town, for you to come crash. You know, just come on in, make it easy on them. Be in town already. Texas Southern, that game is at 8 o'clock. They're, again, good chance to make the tournament. They're the best team in the SWAC, although the SWAC is arguably the worst conference in D1 right now.
Texas Southern makes it every year.
Yeah, I mean, they have been, I think, six times in the last 8 years. Just knocked off Arizona State, who's, again, borderline tournament team out of the Pac-12. Took them to overtime and won there. But
they've been to the Final Four twice as a program.
You know, not recently. Not recently.
No, but that's one more time than we have.
Sure has. We don't really have to break down their scouting report, but I did see their schedule is insane. And I guess a smaller school, smaller budget, you kind of got to do some of these things. But so they started the season with seven top 160 KenPom teams in a row. So pretty tough. Only two of those games at home. They're going to kick off a road trip this week that goes Houston, Auburn, Samford, and Kansas. So three top 15 teams in the country, and then Samford kind of hooking that in with the Auburn game. And they're also playing five games in 8 days. From this last Sunday, yesterday, through next Sunday, they're playing five games.
Wow. That gets your RPI up, though.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter for them. You got to win the SWAC to get in.
Right.
They're basically playing a little bit of a tournament ball right now with all these big games, you know, short rest. They would absolutely love to take a scalp in one of these games. Just hope it's not us.
We can't shoot worse. So it's not like it's going to be like, oh, we have an off night. We hadn't had an on night. So I'd hate to see what an off night looks like.
Yeah, so it's fun. So they're actually the opposite size-wise as Winthrop. I mean, they've got some size in the front court, but that's all they really do. They don't shoot threes. They're going to attack the glass, you know, try and pack the paint on defense. So if Auburn has any luck shooting threes in this game, it should be kind of a runaway. But they're going to make Auburn shoot, though.
So. Yeah. And they should. I mean, that's what any smart coach would do.
Hopefully, right. Randall can just keep breaking down those 2-3 zones if that happens.
Yeah, that's the thing. The good thing about what Wendell did is that maybe that keeps other coaches from trying to get into a zone against us.
Yeah.
But if they do get into a zone against us, we know we've got a guy who can do that.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of guys who can. He's a one-man press break. He was destroying their zone because he would continue to break it down and then they would leave the high post open. And we had a bunch of guys making decent mid-range shots. But yeah, I would rather make them from outside than try to trust the mid-range game.
Yeah. I do. KD got in some foul trouble in this game too.
Picked up too early in a third one before halftime.
Yeah. So that could have an effect and be out of the game to not take any threes, really. I don't think he didn't hit one in this game, but I don't think he took that many. I think he may have taken three, something like that. But, you know, maybe not having him sort of affects it too. If he can get going from three, I mean, we just need one guy that can get going from three. That's essentially all we had last year was one guy that could get going from three. And of course, he was the best player in the league, but, you know, whatever.
One guy to keep an eye on for Texas Southern. First of all, he's super old. He's a fifth-year guy, but started his career late. So he is 24 right now. Is one of their forwards, John Walker, U.S. agent.
Yep.
The Texas Chiefs' favorite MCU TV show.
Yeah, right.
I just want to throw that in there. Sorry.
Which show is this? I thought you were talking about Walker, Texas Ranger.
No, no, no. This is Falcon and Winter Soldier. John Walker is a new character in that show.
Takes up. Are you thinking about? No. He played hockey. Right.
Do what?
He played hockey.
What are you talking about?
Kurt Russell's son played hockey.
Kurt Russell's son.
That's who played John Walker. At UAH.
Oh, I did not know where you were going with that. I completely forgot about that. It's the same guy. Positive.
Okay.
Look, all I know is that it was Cordell. Cordell. If you'd give me 1,000 guesses, I would have not been able to guess what Walker in the television show Walker, Texas Ranger's first name was. Cordell was not on my list.
Oh, yeah. Cordell Walker.
Cordell Walker.
Yeah. Now, I couldn't tell you Trevette's first name, his sidekick.
James.
James Trevette. Okay.
Yeah. Clarence Gilliard plays James Trevette, and Chuck Norris played Cordell Walker. They could have changed. They should have traded first names. All right.
I wish we could pull Conan's Walker, Texas Ranger lever right by now.
Hey, I do have a question. Is Shaq going to be here Friday night? His son plays for Texas Southern. Not the one that was at LSU, but the younger one, Shakir.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Wonder if he and Chuck will be in the building, maybe.
Third? You say third? Is it
Friday night?
Friday? Yeah. Maybe.
No way. I did not know that.
It's a quick drive.
I didn't either. I was just looking at the roster, and I see a Shakir O'Neal. Figured it had to be him, and sure enough, it is.
Yeah, S-H-A-Q-I-R. It does. That's amazing. Good for him. Good for him. All right. Well, guys, let's beat him. And let's beat Western Kentucky. And let's beat... Who played tomorrow night?
Winthrop.
Winthrop. We're going to beat them, too. All right. See y'all next week. Everybody have a War Eagle weekend.
Go
crazy, Cowboys.